This is the Perfectionism Sessions by Natalie Liu for Baggage Reclaim. You're listening to Session 10. So, we've reached the final session, and in this one, I'm going to share a few seemingly small, but nonetheless radical shifts that can make a profound difference. Ask yourself, how many mountains do I need to climb in order to feel that I've achieved, that I'm whole, enough, or worthy? Because the truth is, you've climbed many mountains, including ones you didn't need to climb, but that have helped you to arrive at the point where you're open to the possibility of another way. So, how many more mountains do I need to climb in order to feel that I've achieved? If you've already climbed a lot of mountains, maybe it's time to acknowledge that you've climbed a lot of mountains. Acknowledge the little kid inside of you that's still there and still scared. He or she panics because your current habits give the impression that you're still back there in your childhood. Give that kid what they need: reassurance, boundaries, support, nurturing. Literally, talk you and them through situations where it feels as if it's a threat to your survival and that you will be alienated and abandoned. Let you and him or her know that you have their back. You're their primary caregiver now and have been since you became an adult. And you need to forgive that little kid for not being perfect and or for not having had the perfect parent experiences, etc. Would you persecute another child for what you've been through? Absolutely not. Try to see that kid that you were when this all started and extend the hand of compassion one day, one moment at a time, and as often as you can remember to. Use unsent letters and journaling to connect with your younger self. Put up a picture of you at the age that your fear of being imperfect and your overall habits represent. Look at him or her. Empathize. Humanize you. And remember, like every kid, you did the best that you could to survive and cope. You just don't need to continue with those habits in the same way. It's okay to adapt and tweak and let go of anything that isn't positively serving you. Stop hiding from your unmet needs. This means being honest with you first and foremost about what your needs are. They haven't died, they do exist, and they will wreak havoc in the background if they remain unattended to. If you, one, meet your needs in healthier ways, and two, acknowledge where some needs are already met, they will feel less intense and destructive. Think of unmet needs like a bunch of kids in a minivan or vying for your attention. Yep, pretty distracting. Start looking at other ways to meet your needs that don't involve perfectionism or that at the very least allow you to dial things down. Remove the hidden agenda by identifying what you're always trying to get or avoid. What do you complain that others aren't being or doing for you? What are you hoping that each situation will finally give you? What do you go out of your way to avoid? This offers clues about unmet needs. Become aware of the needs that weren't met earlier in your life so that you can finally give you permission to live. It will also stop you from inadvertently turning people into parental replacements and putting you into a child role. The What's Driving You exercise in the foundational resources will help you to identify these. Acknowledge where some of the things that you criticize you for are actually things that you do to anesthetize you against the pain of perfectionism. I speak to so many people who tell me about loathing themselves due to how much they drink or eat or how codependent they are or some habit. What they haven't acknowledged is that these specific habits are symptoms of the pain of trying to be perfect, of trying to please, and it never being enough. And so they're, for example, eating or drinking their feelings so that they don't have to deal and so that they can keep trying to appeal to the people they want attention, affection, approval, love, or validation from, or who they're trying to avoid conflict, criticism, stress, disappointment, loss, rejection, or abandonment. And it's a false economy. What these people often discover is that they're not doing what they're doing because they're fools or unworthy or whatever. It's that they're in pain from playing the role. When you acknowledge the knock-on effect, when you acknowledge the role, you can finally start to give you what you need. Who are you trying to please with your perfectionism? Is it you? Is it someone else's voice? Two things that help you dial it down, even if it feels a little weird initially, and even if it sparks some initial sadness due to acceptance. If you're trying to please, for example, a parent, acknowledge whether this is even necessary and or whether you have an unpleasable parent. Many perfectionists think that loved ones expect them to be perfect because, well, it's what they've always believed. Do your loved ones want you to suffer? If the answer is no, you don't need to do what you've been doing. If the answer is yes, you definitely don't need to do what you've been doing. Nothing is ever enough for the person who thinks that it's other people's job to please them. They're insatiable, and capitulating to their carry-on only reinforces the idea that you are supply or that you're like a puppet extension of them. Trying to please people isn't proof that you love them, it's just proof that you're afraid of them. And when you realize that others aren't breaking their necks to be perfect and please you, you can breathe out and stop taking part in the pantomime. Failure is a state of mind. You're not saving face by being a perfectionist. You're just creating pain. I've failed at more relationships than I care to remember, but I've been successful at not staying in those same dubious relationships. And it's the fact that I've made my mistakes that showed me where I needed to learn and adapt. Out of mistakes comes success. Out of not admitting mistakes comes, well, more mistakes. Get into the habit of noticing in those times when things go awry, what have you been successful at? And failing at something that you believe that you've been previously successful at is life's way of waking you up to the fact that success doesn't always lie in getting what you want or getting 100%. These experiences are often the very thing that wakes you up to being human and your real needs, desires, expectations, feelings, and opinions. It's important to note, too, that we can and do fail at things, but they don't make us a failure as a person. It took me a long time to shake off the shame of having failed my economics exam at university. Twice. It terrified me, as it flew in the face of what I'd been told I was and had to be. But that failure took me off a path that was not mine, and I never forget that, and I am now eternally grateful. Catch comparison, get in the habit of noting growth. Work out your cues, what triggers you, you know, for being self-critical through comparison, and also what sets you off in terms of being afraid. So catch the thoughts. For example, why does Emma get invited to everything and I don't? And catch the behavior. Example, surfing Instagram or Facebook and feeling flatter and flatter as you unconsciously or possibly consciously compare you and your life. And then look at where you can redirect these thoughts. What can you replace them with? What can you talk back to them with? How can you adjust that behavior so that you don't spend, for instance, a whole load of time surfing Instagram or whatever it is, beating yourself up by comparing you to other people's lives? Also acknowledge, what are you doing today that you couldn't do 6 months ago, a year, 3, 5, 10 years ago? This is growth. This is progress. What new decisions have you made that you might have felt were inconceivable at one point? Again, this is growth. This is progress. And are there any unhealthy habits that you have been working on? Again, this is growth. This is progress. Do B minus work, or at least aim to. Did that scare you to hear that? It did for me. I know I felt uncomfortable when I heard Brooke Castillo, she's a coach, talk about this on a podcast. She's also a recovering perfectionist. And one day, after reading a lengthy letter of gratitude from a client, she realized that the book she hated, that she shamed herself about, that was B minus instead of A plus or A triple plus, was changing lives, many lives. I've had to learn the exact same lesson. This means that you need to know the difference between good enough and perfect. And there is a difference, but you probably don't have one. I was raised in such a way that I base my life on the belief that it's either perfect or fail. That's the all or nothing mentality. If we don't hit the goal in the exact way we pictured it, it's regarded as a failure. We fail to recognize that actually, despite not reaching the goal, we achieved and grew more than we would have done without having had that goal in the first place. It's also vital to note that how you picture things, i.e. perfect, isn't the only way. It's not the one route. It's not the only route. This is something that you discover with work-related projects where you go off brief or take way too long because you're perfecting. There's an earlier stage of work that hits the spot. It is unlikely, unless you're doing surgery or similar, that you need the kind of precision that you apply to a lot of what you do. The funny thing is that you might be sitting there thinking, Natalie, I just want to be good enough. I'm not even trying to be perfect. Mate, if you weren't trying to be perfect, you'd have already chilled the hell out. Your idea of, air quotes, good enough is perfection. For anything that you battle over trying to do perfectly or you worry about being good enough, work out your worst case scenario, good enough scenario, and perfect scenario. It's time to work out what good enough is, because actually, for the overwhelming majority of perfectionists, there is no difference between those. It's literally either failure or perfection, and it's time to figure out where good enough lies. Stop blaming imperfection. Blaming not being good enough is a cop-out, and Lord knows I've used it many a time. Outside of situations where, for instance, you needed to get 90% on the test to get something and you achieved less, which is a case of your effort not being enough on that occasion, not you being fundamentally not good enough, don't use this excuse. Anytime you use "I'm not good enough" or its variations to explain why you feel as you do or why things haven't gone your way, you are lying to yourself. And the clue is in how you feel, but also in the fact that you keep coming up against the same problems. This is because imperfection wasn't to blame. You haven't learned what you really needed to learn from that experience. Us humans reach for not good enough because it's easier than doing the work of creating healthier boundaries, of self-reflecting, like proper self-reflection, healthy self-reflection, of not telling the story in the same way. It's seen as easier than losing our attachment to our emotional baggage, and we are attached to it. When we've told ourselves something a trazillion times and based our whole life on it, it's just the explanation that we reach for. Contemplating something else seems bloody terrifying, but it is the key to your liberation. I encourage you to pick a few situations where you've basically blamed your enoughness for what happened. Write out the facts, not the story. You will very quickly see why the situation went down in the way that it did. One of the wisest pieces of advice that I've ever been given is this, and now I pass it on to you. The imperfection isn't a punishment. It's a spur to keep going. And I want to add, it's not a spur to keep going in the form of brutalizing you to become perfect. It's the thing that encourages you to recognize and embrace your humanness so that you can not only survive, but thrive. Thank you for joining me for these sessions. Take care of you.